I'm personally really excited that testing requirements to re-enter the U.S. have been lifted. But there are still some people around the world who are waiting for vaccines. With App in the Air, you can upload all of your health documents to the app, and from now until the end of June, they will donate a vaccine to someone in need for every vaccine certificate uploaded to the app. Check out App in the Air and get 20% off of your next flight when you book directly through the app by using the code GeoBreeze at checkout. Thank you to App in the Air for partnering with this episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. Welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast, a show for anyone wanting to level up their travel hacking lifestyle. I'm your host, Julia Menez. I'm a travel hacker, coach, speaker, Filipina-American ENTJ who loves solid travel gear and using shortcuts on spreadsheets. On this show, I'm on a mission to bring you travel hackers from all walks of life to help you level up your travel hacking game. We dive into credit cards, miles, points, strategy, mindset, and the secrets behind how to travel the world for next to no cost. So let's get hacking.
The Squaw Creek Resort and the Hyatt Regency are both about 21,000 points a night around this time of year. And cash rates can be $500 or $600 per night, especially if you're going on a weekend when there's some fresh powder. Last year, we didn't book that far in advance, but this year we knew people were starting to do more, travel more, and we booked pretty far in advance. So this year we got a cash rate of about $180, which was very low. Closer to the date, the rates went up back to about $500, $600. We chose to stay at the Hyatt Regency as opposed to Squaw Creek, which, you know, has ski in, ski out privileges, just because we're pretty novice skiers. And also we're teaching our daughter how to ski. She's 4 now. So this was our second time taking lessons. And there's a small resort that's just up the hill from the Hyatt Regency. And you can they have shuttle up there. So it's pretty easy to get to.
Hey there, points people. You just heard a clip from Lauren Rabsett from This Is How We Do Trips. Lauren is a 30-something analytics consultant, wife, and mom of 2 kids under 5. She is committed to making her money work for her so that her family can see the world without breaking the bank. In this episode, Lauren and I discuss how she and her family took a fantastic skiing vacation to Lake Tahoe on points. And in case you've never looked at prices for Lake Tahoe hotels, they are expensive. While it might seem weird to have an episode about ski trips in June, it's actually a great time to start looking at award availability for different ski resorts you would like to visit. Many of the most sought-after ski resorts are Hyatt properties, such as Park Hyatt Beaver Creek, Hyatt Centric Park City, Grand Hyatt Vail, and Hyatt Residence Club Lake Tahoe. If you're interested in staying at a Hyatt ski resort, check out the World of Hyatt card, which earns you a Category 1 through 4 free night certificate that you can use at hotels, such as the Hyatt Place Keystone. Remember, never ever apply for cards through Google. Always use a friend or creator's referral or affiliate links. If you're interested in supporting this show when you apply for your next card, check out geobreezetravel.com/cards. And now, on with the show. Hey, Lauren, welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast.
Good morning, Julia. Thank you for having me today.
Of course. I'm so excited to have you here. We're going to talk a little bit about the Lake Tahoe area and how somebody can do some ski trips there on award travel. But before we jump into all of that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get into the game of points and miles?
Yeah, thanks. So my day job is in analytical consulting, which is pretty far away from points and miles. I'm a mom of 2 really small kids under 5 and wife. And I got into points and miles just as a way to help my family travel and see the world. I don't travel a lot for work, so I don't have an opportunity to earn points there. But I've, over the past decade or so, learned more about credit cards and have really been leveraging them to enable this travel.
What were some of the first cards that you started off with back in the day?
So my first ever credit card, I think, was a bank-related card. I think it was Bank of America. But my first travel rewards credit card was the SPG Amex, which is now a grandfathered version of the Marriott Bonvoy card. And I had that in my wallet probably for 3 or 4 years before I even realized that it was a travel rewards credit card. I happened to stumble upon PointsGuy article where they were talking about some of the card benefits. And I was like, oh, I actually have this in my wallet. And that was sort of when I started to take a look at travel rewards and points and miles and understanding how to leverage that to travel the world for free.
What made you get that card back in the day if you weren't already into points and miles and award travel? Because that was one of my first cards, RIP, to the Starwood program, which was fantastic and has now been devalued beyond all recognition. But yeah, what made you get that card back in the day if not for the perks that came with the card?
I think I really just got like a bunch of mailers from Amex, and I just picked that card for whatever reason. I was either in college or in grad school at the time, and I didn't really use credit cards. You know, I had one for, you know, sort of emergencies, but I just signed up for the card and essentially forgot about it for a long time. So there wasn't any particular impetus for me to pick that specific card. It just happened to be a good choice, unbeknownst to me.
So when you realize, oh, wow, there's actually a lot of good perks that come with this card, what were some of the first award trips that you used with it? Or how did you first start using those benefits?
So when I first started essentially playing the points and miles game, my strategy was really around finding cheap flights and then booking hotels for free, because I wasn't earning a ton of points. And so I didn't really have enough where I could cover a flight and hotel most of the time. And I was still, you know, sort of fresh out of school and not spending as much. So a lot of mine were just local trips to see friends around the United States. There's not anything in particular that really stands out to me from the early days as being a particularly good redemption, and not to age myself, but it's been about, you know, 10 or 12 years since I started using that card. So I can't say that I remember anything in particular about those early days.
At what point did you start getting more into the points game where you realized, oh, I can use these points for different hotel stays? And that kind of opened the door up into more cards. How did you start getting deeper and deeper into the game of points and miles?
Yeah, so after I got married, which was in 2015, my husband and I started talking about just sort of the lifestyle that we were wanting to have. And travel was really important to me. He had a bunch of credit cards and, you know, didn't really do anything strategic with his earning. And so that's when I really started following the points guy and some other bloggers a little bit more in depth and started signing up for some other cards. So my husband got the Chase Sapphire Reserve, and I was his authorized user. And then we both sort of got our own set of Chase Freedom and Chase Freedom Unlimited card to sort of maximize all the points that we could get from that program. And then I started getting some Amex cards, like the Amex Gold, for our grocery spending. And so then we were sort of following a similar strategy where I'd find cheap flights. You know, I follow the flight deal. I have some of the other subscription-based programs as well. And we started taking more trips using those points. And, you know, we were able to go shortly after we got married. We were able to take a nice trip to India and Dubai. And we got the flight on an amazing flight deal for, I think it was $400 round trip for our Dubai flight. And then we covered all of our hotels in Dubai and in Delhi on points. And that was his first experience using points and miles. And then we were later able to cover our honeymoon to Indonesia on as well for the hotel and got a cheap flight deal there as well. So that sort of kicked it off for us. And then, you know, we've, you know, strategically just been slowly adding more cards. We're not, I think, as aggressive as some folks involved in this area where we don't get as many cards per year, just because we don't have a lot of spending that can go on it in terms of like large purchases. Sometimes we'll ask family to help us meet the sign-up bonuses when they have large purchases coming up. So we take a little bit slower approach to earning our miles, but we also both work, you know, 9-to-5 jobs. And my husband, unfortunately, doesn't have a lot of PTO. So it works for us at the rate that we're accruing new credit cards and burning our miles and points.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's lots of different ways to approach the hobby. I know a lot of us are opening 4 or more cards a year, and not everybody has to do that. You can just open 1 or 2 each year, get a new sign-up bonus, and be good to go from there. What are some of the more recent cards that you've opened?
So most recently, I this is, you know, my second time opening a Southwest Rapid Rewards personal card. So I opened the priority card when they offered the bonus promotion, like in December of last year. So I applied right before that. And then, you know, I've been slowly pursuing the Southwest Companion Pass. I'm about 2,000 points shy, so we're almost there. So we're looking to utilize that, you know, for this year and 2023. So that's been my most recent sign-up bonus. And then last year, we opened a Hyatt credit card, and that is part of what prompted us to pursue Hyatt Globalist status last year for travel.
How did you get Globalist? Did you do the promo at the beginning of 2021 with like the 2X nights, or did you just stay at a lot of Hyatts? What was kind of your strategy to get Globalist?
Yeah, so we took advantage of the bonus journeys promotion early in 2021. We did have to do some mattress runs still to meet that. So we have a local Hyatt that is pretty cheap on cash, where we did a little staycation so we could use a pool. And then we took our first trip to Lake Tahoe last year. And so to sort of build in some extra nights, and because our kids were really little at the time, or even littler than they are now, we broke up that trip where we stopped. We took a road trip. We stopped on our way there in Sacramento and stayed at a smaller hotel that was had a cheap cash rate, and then traveled on to Tahoe, covered that with some points, and then returned on our way back, stopped again at the same hotel, and then came home. And with the bonus journeys promo that they had last year, which was amazing, plus a credit card, we were able to hit the 30 nights that were required in 2021 to get globalist status.
Are you going to try to renew it in 2022 since the requirement's back up to 60 nights?
You know, we initially weren't going to, but because of the number of stays that we have, I think it might be feasible for us to hit it again this year. We had an unexpected long trip in March where we went to Mexico City and we covered with Hyatt points, and that was 7 nights that we hadn't been anticipating. And we have some travel planned for later this year where, again, we're staying pretty much at Hyatt exclusively just because we want to take advantage of those globalist benefits while we have it. We're not right now, the numbers aren't going to hit 60. You know, we'll see what other promotions come up with Hyatt. And if it's, you know, it's feasible for our financial situation, we might go ahead and do some mattress runs to get there.
Sounds good. So during your bonus journeys promo in 2021, you mentioned that you guys went to Lake Tahoe. Tell us a little bit more about Lake Tahoe, and if somebody wanted to travel there using points and miles, what are some of the different options for how to get to Lake Tahoe and where to stay? Because it can be a pretty expensive area.
So last year, obviously, was a totally different situation. People weren't traveling as much. So there was pretty much wide open availability at both the Hyatt hotels in the area. So what's available is the Lake Tahoe, Hyatt Regency Lake Tahoe Resort and Spa. And then there's also the resort at Squaw Creek. And I think they also have a residence club there as well, but I haven't looked into that one as much. It's a category 7. So a little bit pricier on points, but the Squaw Creek Resort and the Hyatt Regency are both about 21,000 points a night around this time of year. And cash rates can be $500 or $600 per night, especially if you're going on a weekend when there's some fresh powder. Last year, we didn't book that far in advance, but this year we knew, you know, people were starting to do more, travel more, and we booked pretty far in advance. So this year we got a cash rate of about $180, which was very low. Closer to the date, the rates went up back to about $500, $600. We chose to stay at the Hyatt Regency as opposed to Squaw Creek, which, you know, has ski in, ski out privileges, just because we're pretty novice skiers. And also we're teaching our daughter how to ski. She's 4. And so this is our second time taking lessons. And there's a small resort that's just up the hill from the Hyatt Regency, and you can take, they have a shuttle up there. So it's pretty easy to get to. And we're also, we are also on a multi-generational trip with our family at that time. And so we were trying to be cognizant of their finances as well. So that's why we chose to stay at the Hyatt Regency. And also it's right on the lake. It's beautiful. I don't know if you've ever seen Lake Tahoe, but the water is pristine. Like it's so clear. You can see all the way to the bottom, like even if you're out on the lake. It's just a beautiful, beautiful place. And we were going on weekdays. So I figured I would, you know, try and take an opportunity to book a standard room there and hopefully get upgraded with our globalist status. And that ended up working out for us. We drive to Lake Tahoe because we're located in the Bay Area. My parents are in Southern California. They chose to drive, but they could have also flown into Reno Airport, which is a pretty quick drive, like less than an hour away from that Hyatt Regency location. There are a number of other points hotels. I know Marriott has some properties in Lake Tahoe and North Lake Tahoe as well. I don't dabble as much in other hotel loyalty programs just because we don't travel that much and most of our currency transfers to either Hyatt or to Marriott. So that's what we focus on. But the strategy that we had for this particular trip, again, was that we would travel sort of on non-peak days, arriving on a Sunday and leaving on a Wednesday, so that there wouldn't be as much demand for upgrades and hopefully fewer folks getting globalist upgrades. They have a great VIP concierge program and they reach out to you ahead of time to check in and see if there's anything that they need from you. And I took the opportunity to message them back and just explain that we're traveling with our grandparents and that we would be taking one of our kids skiing, but my parents would be watching our younger kid and it would be great if we had more room, and asked for a specific upgrade. And they at the time said that they couldn't promise anything, but if they had the availability, they would be able to grant the upgrade that we were requesting, which was to a premium suite, which wasn't included as part of our globalist upgrades. And it just happened to work out and we were able to stay in their cottages. They have about 12 or 15 cottages that are like directly on the lake. And we have a ton of space, a 2-bedroom suite with a very large living area, dining area, and a full kitchen. And we essentially just walked out of our cottage onto the lake. So it was really beautiful and a really great experience to share with extended family.
You are doing this in the winter, right? So what is the situation to get from the cottages to the ski slopes?
Yes. So when you're staying in the cottages, you'll either need to walk to the main property, which they have like a footbridge over like a major road that you can cross over to the hotel, and then you can take the shuttle up there, or you can drive. We just drove because the ski resort at the time, they, you know, prefer that you keep as much of your belongings in your own vehicle or like at home, essentially, as you can. So we just chose to drive. It's about a mile's drive from the Hyatt Regency. It's called Diamond Peak Ski Resort. And it has an awesome view of Lake Tahoe as well. If you ski like the blue and black slopes. And so it's a really quick trip up the hill. For us, it was convenient because when our daughter was done with her lessons, you know, my dad could come pick her up really easily and take her back. And my husband and I continue on with our day of skiing and snowboarding.
Is this hotel mostly catering to skiing holidays, or is this also a good hotel for people who wanted to go there in the summer and have a lake weekend or something?
This hotel would be great in both seasons. They do have a number of water activity equipment that you can rent. So like kayaks and stand-up paddle boards. And like I said, you're right on the lake. Even if you're not staying in the cottages, everybody that stays at the resort has access to that beach. It's essentially a private beach for Hyatt. And you can rent those things. They have a dock and you can go out into the water. It's very convenient for anybody wanting to do some water activities. I don't know if they have motorized boating from that location, but definitely individual water sports you can take advantage of there.
If you are listening to this episode thinking, I wish I could travel like this, but I don't know where to start, I offer free credit card consultations by email at geobreezetravel.com/consultations. Additionally, I host a masterclass and group coaching session each month through the Patreon. We've also added a new Patreon feature. Once you've been in the Patreon for 12 consecutive months, I will gift you a vacation voucher to the city of your choice. I've also added an option to sign up for an annual membership. With this option, you will get 2 free masterclasses each year, and you'll get your vacation package voucher upfront. You can find more information about the vacation vouchers, consultations, and more in the show notes. This week's Patreon shout out goes out to Mike. Thank you so much for being a part of the GeoBreeze Travel Patreon community.
What is the globalist breakfast situation like at this property?
So this Hyatt Regency does not have a Regency Club. So you eat in a restaurant on site and you essentially have full access. There's no limit to what you can order. And so the restaurant on site is called the Sierra Cafe. They have a pretty broad selection. We got things like steak and eggs. I got breakfast tacos pretty much every day because they're really good. But, you know, all of your standard fare and lots of options for the kids in terms of like cereals and granolas and just more basic options for them as well. And then they also have a to-go cafe that's right next to the Sierra Cafe. So if you don't have time to do a sit-down breakfast, you can use your globalist benefit there and just grab and go and take something to go with you.
Are there a lot of other restaurants in the area if somebody didn't want to just have every meal at this ski resort? Are you close to town?
Yes. So you are in Incline Village. There are a number of restaurants in the area. For this day, we opted to pretty much eat exclusively at Hyatt because we wanted to get additional points from charging back to our room. So on site, in addition to the cafe I mentioned where the breakfast is, there's Cutthroat Saloon, which is like kind of like bar food, pub food. And then there's Lone Eagle Grill, which is fine dining, you know, white tablecloths, great steaks, some game dishes. And then if you wanted to go completely off of the resort altogether, there's a little downtown area that has a lot of, you know, like pizza and burritos and a lot of fast casual sort of dining. Not a lot of chains from what I've seen and from where I've eaten. But the last time when we, you know, visited, obviously with COVID sort of being in high gear, there weren't a lot of places where we could go and sit down at that time. So we pretty much grabbed pizza or grabbed some burritos from in town and took them back to the hotel to eat.
That sounds good. So generally when you pay with Hyatt points, you get resort fees waived, which is really nice for places with high resort fees, like if there's a water park or if there's like high ski resort fees or something like that. What are the resort fees like in this property? And do you know if they waive everything if you pay with points?
So since the skiing is just essentially like a relationship that they have with the ski resort, they're not helping sort of facilitate any of the payments for skiing. None of that is included in your Hyatt stay. They just have the free shuttle and they have an office where you can, you know, make arrangements, but it's not like at the hotel at Squaw Creek where it is the ski resort. So, you know, you can get the regular resort fees waived, but that would be included with a points stay. And they don't charge for parking unless you choose to valet. And parking isn't really an issue at the cottages because you have your own parking immediately outside of your cottage. So that only comes into play if you're staying in the main hotel and say it's really cold and you don't feel like making the trek from the parking lot to the lobby entrance, then you can, you know, take advantage of valet parking and that would be an additional fee.
Do you know if Squaw Creek, their resort fees include the skiing activities and if those would be waived if somebody paid with points?
You know, I'm not familiar with that because we didn't do a lot of research into it once we realized that they didn't allow dogs. But it was a deal breaker for us because my dad wanted to bring his dog. So once I looked into that and realized it wasn't an option, I sort of stopped my research for that hotel there. You know, if you have the availability to go more than once, right? I think that's where the real savings can be found. It's in those multi-day passes or in a ski season pass. We're like you, where right now we're only going, we only made one trip this year, one trip last year. You know, my daughter's still learning how to ski. So it's still a situation where we need someone to come help out with both of our kids. So that limits sort of how often we can go skiing. You know, booking early obviously will save you a lot on a hotel. I would say from my experience, I haven't seen a lot of offers for like discounts or, you know, offers to take up from, you know, hotels or from credit cards for ski areas. If you travel to ski, you know, obviously things like the Southwest Companion Pass so that, you know, you can cut down on some of the costs there, or just using points and miles on another airline to cover your flight costs. But for the actual skiing itself, I haven't seen true opportunities to save on that. I think, you know, if you're someone who pursues, for instance, like bake bonuses, you know, that's an opportunity to make a little bit of cash from opening an account and maybe using that money to offset some of the costs of skiing. But it's definitely an expensive hobby for sure.
Yeah, that's a good point. Bank bonuses or just cash back type of bonuses from all of the different apps, Rakuten, any of those can be really good to offset the cost of these excursions, or just pay yourself back programs. Chase has a pay yourself back, or using Capital One points to offset them from your statement. You could do that. Sometimes you can book through different travel agents who might have discounts. You might be able to also, one, get a big sign-up bonus if you're just buying Icon passes or something before the season where you're like, well, we've got to buy four or five of these for our family anyway. That's a good way towards meeting the sign-up bonus on a new card. Or sometimes, I don't know if they do this with ski resorts, but I know for theme parks and stuff, you can actually sometimes finance the charges on it and split it between two different credit cards if you were to supposedly get the Chase Freedom Flex and then the Chase Freedom Limited. Each of those is only $500. And so if you're buying multiple ski passes, you might need to split that across multiple cards. And if you're getting a sign-up bonus, it could possibly be worth the extra financing charge to say, hey, I'd like to do a down payment on this card, and then I'd like to pay the rest of the balance on another card. So you can sometimes negotiate with different travel agents that way in order to save some money too. So lots of different ways to do it, from just getting cashback bonuses from bank bonuses or something, statement credit offsets. You can do travel agent tricks to get sign-up bonuses on these. So those are some different ways that you could offset some ski passes with points and miles as well. Do you buy yours just directly from the resort once you get there? Or I know I've seen grocery stores in Colorado that sometimes offer discounted passes. Where do you buy yours?
So we buy our passes directly from a Diamond Peak. We've been taking private lessons. My husband decided he wanted to switch from skiing to snowboarding this year. And then for kids' lessons, for a certain age, they require them to be private lessons as well. So in order to book that, they require you to call in. And so it's just easier for me to manage all of that in one transaction.
Do you have your own gear or do you rent gear?
We rent gear. And so they offer rental packages, and it's nice because they will let you take all of your gear. If you're skiing for multiple days, they'll let you take your gear back to your hotel or resort with you instead of checking it in and out every day. So that saves some time.
Do you bring snacks onto the slopes with you or anything? Like, how do you pack water and everything? Do you take a bag with you?
I do not take a bag with me. They, in the past, have recommended not bringing anything with you. So I usually will stuff some snacks for my daughter, like some granola bars in, you know, additional pockets on my body. But other than that, we essentially will keep anything in our car and just sort of walk to our car to get water or to get a snack for ourselves. Because it's not a huge ski resort. And that's part of why we like it. It's smaller and pretty easy to manage as newbies. And so you can just sort of quickly walk over to your vehicle and do whatever you need to do and then get back up on the slopes.
That's nice. I've been to a couple of Colorado ones where, first of all, I suck at walking in ski boots. It was the hardest thing ever. I walked down some stairs in ski boots, was pretty sure that was how I was going to die, because I'm like, I just can't figure out how to walk in ski boots. Snowboarding ones were a lot better. But that just made it so I didn't want to go back and forth to different, like between the car and the lift and anything. So yeah. What I see a lot of people do in Colorado is they'll actually just have like either all their pockets stuffed with snacks and stuff. Like you mentioned, have like a small messenger bag that they have strapped around themselves, or what's very popular, and it seems like a very Colorado thing, people actually have those camelback backpacks that they have on, where they just have like the tube that's strapped to their shoulder and they can take that and suck on a little bit of water so that you're not so dehydrated on these slopes, because you are at high altitude doing athletic activity. If you're like me and you've skied 2 or 3 times in your life, then you're just expelling more energy because you're just freaking out at every moment, being like, what is going on? And like, oxygen is leaving your body, calories are leaving your body. So having a couple liters of water just strapped to you in a backpack can actually be really, really nice. And we won't even talk about how inconvenient it is to use the bathroom if you need to do that while you're a woman on a ski slope. I don't know how people do this. I don't ski enough or snowboard enough to figure out like all of those conveniences of how people do this. If you are an avid skier, which I think a lot of points and miles people are, send me a DM of how you handle all of these logistics. But yeah, bringing a camelback, water backpack, bringing snacks onto the hill can be a lifesaver, especially if you're like me and you get hangry and frustrated while trying to go down a hill. I don't know if anybody has seen the South Park episode where they say, if you want to go slow, make a pizza. And if you want to go fast, do French fries. And if you French fry, when you want a pizza, you're going to have a bad time. And that was me. Or I just pizzaed down the entire hill. Fun times. Any other tips for doing ski vacations, especially with small children in tow?
Yeah, I think with small kids, you know, you definitely need to look into what your ski resort or your hotel resort offers, because there are some that don't offer lessons below a certain age. Diamond Peak, you have to be at least 3, and that does require a private lesson, which is obviously more expensive than group lessons that are available for older kids. Something to take into account is whether or not the resort offers free lift passes for kids under a certain age. Some of them are like under 6, some under 12, depending on the resort. So that's something to take into account. If you have flexibility to travel during the week while your kids are small, like mine, where school attendance isn't a thing, if you can go on weekdays, you know, there's a lot fewer people out on the slopes for one thing, and rates will be lower. It's a great way to save some money. And then think about a multi-generational trip, because then you're not limited by your kids' ski ability or lack of, like we were. We were able to just take our daughter, have her ski lessons, and then she was with Grandpa and Nona for the rest of the day. And we had a full day where we were able to ski, which was great.
That is great. I guess I forgot one question about the cottages. Are these like full apartments where you have kitchens and everything else, so you can just bring all of your own food and store it there and then cook your own dinners?
Yes. In the cottages, you can cook. You have a full kitchen, you have a dining room table, a living area. And ours was configured essentially so that all of that was one side of the suite. So if we didn't need a 2-bedroom, we could just have the 1-bedroom with all of those living space amenities. And then essentially it was like a standard double or 2-queen room with a connecting door that turned it into a 2-bedroom suite for us.
Sounds good. Well, these were all fantastic tips about Lake Tahoe and how to do ski trips with families. And as we kind of wrap up, with everything that you've learned and all the knowledge that you've amassed with points and miles, what would you say is your number one travel hacking tip for listeners today?
Book the deal when you see it. I recently missed out on some very inexpensive first class tickets on points. They're about 25,000 points for a transcontinental flight. And I saw them. I said, wow, that's an amazing deal. And I said, let me see if this is available on another day. And in those few moments it took me to check the other day, those tickets were gone. So, you know, we have a lot of protections in terms of booking a flight and having that 24-hour window to cancel. So if you see a good deal, take it.
That is a crazy good deal. Did you say this was in upper class too, or was it an economy?
Yeah, it was first class. Yeah.
On what airline?
It would have been a United flight, and it was through Avianca Life Miles that I saw the availability.
That is a crazy good deal, because normally, roughly, it'll take about twice that to travel across the U.S. one way per person, 50 or 60,000 points if you're looking at United or American Airlines. JetBlue Mint is ridiculous. Best way to do that one is if you have the Amex Business Platinum, you get a 35% back rebate when you book with points. And that's one of the only ways that I found to make that one affordable, unless you can find availability on JetBlue Mint through Emirates, which I keep trying to stalk, and it is rare to find that kind of availability. So 25,000 points. Yeah. Crazy.
Kicking myself over that. Yeah.
That was one way, right?
Yeah, that was one way.
Yeah, the only other way that I can think of to do it even cheaper is Turkish Miles and Smiles, where if you can find a United business class flight, you can go from anywhere to anywhere in the US. So you could technically find it from New York to Hawaii if you wanted to. And it would be 25,000 points in business class round trip, or 12,500 one way. But that availability disappears as soon as it appears. It's okay to find the economy flights that are 7,500 points one way anywhere in the US, even East Coast to Hawaii or Alaska. And technically the business class exists. I think it's one of those urban myths. People say they've done it. I've never been able to find it. And I search often for that type of availability. So if you ever do find those types of rewards, people just jump on it. Jump on it now, cancel it later. If you're like, hey, spouse, are we busy on these days? If so, then cancel the flight. But yeah, just jump on it when you see it. Awesome advice. Speaking of great advice, can you give a shout out to somebody else that listeners should follow for fantastic points and miles tips?
Sure. Yeah. So an account that I recently found, it's a family that also travels on points, is Hassan on Holiday. And they've been making some pretty funny reels and sharing good advice. So check them out.
Perfect. And where can we find you on the internet?
So on Instagram and Facebook. You can find me at This Is How We Do Trips. And on Twitter, I'm on How We Do Trips. I'm just getting into Twitter again, but most of my content is on Instagram.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again, Lauren, so much for coming onto the show today and telling us about Lake Tahoe and different ski trips.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. If any of the cards mentioned in today's episode piqued your interest, please check out the links in the show notes for more information on any of the cards. Also, if you apply for a card using the links on that page, I may receive a commission too, so please and thank you. P.S. I hear the links work better in Internet Explorer or Safari, and sometimes the credit card applications tend to glitch out in Chrome. Additionally, it would mean the world to me if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. And if you would like to make even more travel hacking friends, please sign up for the Patreon to access our monthly masterclass hangouts. We dive deep into a particular points program each month, and you'll get to ask all of your travel hacking questions and enjoy being around other people who enjoy points and miles just as much as you and I do. If you would like an invite to the next one, head over to geobreezetravel.com/hangouts to sign up to be on the invite list. Take care and happy travels!